Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. It is Canada's only campus-produced hockey show that strictly talks hockey. We are happy to have you with us tonight, folks. And if you're a Jets fan, you probably want to tune in and stay tuned in for the entire hour. As we have our first ever, and happy to have everybody here with us. Everybody showed up except for Murat, but we'll get to him in a second. Murat had a very good reason not to be here, so I'm going to let him go and do whatever he has to do tonight and talk about that, like I said, in a second. But happy to have our guest here tonight on the very first Winnipeg Jets Superfan Roundtable. It's going to be fun. It's going to be lots of information about the Jets as we fade out Jets 1.0 there and we get everybody else going here. So I'm going to start going around the room. Everybody can introduce themselves. I'll do a little intro as well for everybody. I'm going to start with the man to my immediate left, as he has basically been a backbone and like a community pillar in terms of getting the Bruce Oak Recovery Center up and running. Rod, thanks for coming down and thanks for being part of this.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
We are proud and honored to have a guy who's doing some great work like that on the show for sure. It's an outstanding endeavor, and we certainly don't mind giving you a little promo for all the hard work you've been doing for it. So
awesome, thanks.
Hey. That's awesome. It's great. So thanks for joining us, Rod. Next to him, you'll recognize this guy's voice as the man who usually follows me on Thursday nights as we bring in Skippy, who hosts Free Range Radio as one of the super fans. Skippy, how are you?
Good.
That's good.
You
can
gloss over me. I'm not.
Yeah, you're not that important.
No.
That's what you think. One of the men, Rod, who was part of the Jet-Centric podcast, the other gentleman who is here tonight from the Jet-Centric podcast. If you haven't checked that out, definitely go check it out. It is all Jets all the time, and it's all awesome, pretty much. Want to give him a shout out a little bit. Here's AJ, who hosts the Jet Centric podcast. Jay, how are you? Sorry, I was looking at Jay next to you.
I'm doing pretty good. I want to spend the whole time talking about my 2010 run for school trustee.
Oh, hey,
my failed run.
We can do that.
Just talk about that.
We can talk about failed political runs. Yeah. Sure, that's no problem.
It won't be failed next time.
Yeah. What ward was that?
No, I don't think it exists anymore. Ward 3, River East Transcona School Division. So
that's been all amalgamated. It's all been changed.
Yep,
okay,
changed.
Gerrymandered away, so that's all right then. And next to him, gentleman who we've had on the show a number of times, and certainly glad to have him back. He is the sports editor for the Manitoban, Jason Pajak. How are you, Jason?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm very good. So, I mean, first off, I'm going to sort of run through just a couple of things here. First off, best wishes to Mark Letestu. If you haven't heard, Mark Letestu diagnosed with a virus of the heart that will keep him out for at least 6 months. So, best of wishes to Mark Letestu. I know there were a few people in Winnipeg that were like, why Mark when he got signed? But we're not here to rain on anybody's parade. So, Mark Letestu, I know you don't listen to the show, but if you ever tune in, best wishes to you. Let's get into the other best wishes, because another gentleman went down the other day, Brian Little, who suffered a horrific on-ice accident. Little is now out after doctors found a brain bleed after he was, admitted to hospital, and he has a perforated eardrum as he's been released from hospital now, thankfully. Sounds like he's in good spirits, according to what Blake Wheeler said today, so good for him. I'm going to ask you guys, though, after a concussion already suffered this season and now a severe injury, another head injury to Brian Little, is it time for Brian Little to pull a Crosby and maybe take the rest of the year off?
I mean, I would say yes. You know, this is coming from a guy that studies CTE and traumatic brain injuries, and I'm actually reading Boy on Ice, the story of Derek Bugard.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I think in that situation, especially with the severity of this injury, with perforated eardrum and the brain bleed, like, you want to give yourself as much time as possible to recover and do everything you can. Like, you're a year of hockey is not worth, you know, years off of your life.
No, exactly.
So I think definitely he should pull a Crosby and just pull the plug on the year.
Or at least extended time. Like, don't think of coming back until, like, before the All-Star break, and then reevaluate how you're feeling, you know, and get more medical advice. Like, not thinking about coming back now. Just think about reevaluating in.
But that's the question, though. Like, come back at all, though. Like, legitimately, you've suffered two pretty traumatic injuries in a month.
You put that on the table now.
Well, I think you can make that decision now, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
if that's how you feel now, then yeah, okay. You can. Okay. But you don't have to.
No, I'm not saying you have to. But again, if looking at your overall,
the impression I got is like, oh, he should do that. He should decide whether he's going to, you know, end it now or not. I was like, well, if that's how he feels, sure. But
I was going to say, I think if we get, I'm sure we'll get into talking about Bufflin a little bit. Maybe sure. You do not want to retire and then try and go on long term injured reserve later. He should stay on that as long as he possibly can. He's getting paid to be injured. So that's not.
Well,
a,
he did
not
report, so it helps his case already.
Yeah, he's got a strong case.
Anybody else want to jump in? Rod, you want to just anything on that?
I just saying, take your time and assess. Like, he's a human being, and life comes first, right? So. Mm-hmm. Take a look at where the Jets are this season and where the progression is, but that's all secondary to Brian Little, the human being, right?
So. Yeah, for sure. Good news out of Jets camp today. Tucker Pullman, but close to being back. We'll see when he's back, but certainly he's back on the ice and skating. We've seen a number of players come through the camp in the last couple of weeks. Carl Dahlstrom and Lucas Spezza obviously were added to help the Jets through some rough patches. Looking at the overall state of the defense, which is one of the big topics in Winnipeg. How does everybody feel about where the Jets are and how they've managed these ridiculous number of injuries?
There's not much to say. it's just like it's the most difficult situation to look at because there are obviously bright spots. Obviously, Josh Morrissey's been an absolute force. Neil Pionk is. I was one of the people that was beating the drum that like this was a good trade, you know, looking at the players that they are now, but Pionk had tools and he had an upward trajectory where he could be a very skilled defenseman, especially paired alongside of Josh Morrissey. And defensively, he's looked a lot better coming in, you know, through this year. He's actually one of the defensemen for the Jets that has a positive Corsi Rel. So the Jets are actually doing better possession-wise when he's on the ice, which is something that you definitely want, especially a team like the Jets that was so bad according to possession metrics last year. And he's looked really great. I can't say the same for Anthony Boteto, but that's not... I would be like sitting here yelling about Anthony Boteto for a full hour if I could. It's so hard to see where this team is at. You've got the bright spots, but you've also got like the question marks of like the Spezzas, the Potatoes, the Dahlstroms. It's a huge question mark still.
Geppetto's really good at making puppets, though, I think.
Well played. I got to say, well played, Rod. That was awesome.
it's tempering expectation and tempering what we're looking at the team. Like, a lot of people are chomping at the bit to see Heinola up with the team and you know, that little video clip of Heinola and Nyku on the blue line for the Moose. I mean, how can you not salivate at that, right? But it's kind of like the old mantra that's been prevalent here, right? Like it's talking about heaviness and guys that are good in the room and talking about glue. And you know what? A lot of the fan base is frustrated because we want people that are actually good at hockey in the lineup, right? So that's kind of the frustration on the defensive side. We have some pieces here, you know, why don't we see an Ogier in before a Boteto? And, you know, there's a lot of different pieces that could be put in, and it just doesn't really make sense to a lot of people, the deployment. And, you know, picking up a Lucas Spezza, like, to me is just more of the same old, right?
Yeah.
All these borderline NHLers that we're plugging holes with, in spite of having some guys that have been in the system that have some upside and plugging them in the lineup, it's kind of counterintuitive to what this team is supposed to be about, a draft and develop team, right? Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, even at this point, I would be fine instead of Boteto to see a Logan Stanley, who I know has been a controversial character, you know, in Jets fandom. But, I mean, if he's part of the system and he's been a pro for, what, 3 years now or whatever it is, I mean, they talk so highly of him at the fan forum, and Pascal Vincent has spoke very highly of him. Let's see what he could do on that third pair. I mean, like, it, to be fair, you know, and I don't want to just, you know, have a big Boteto trashing fest or something like that, although it'd be fun. But, I mean, is he going to be really that much worse? I fail to see that.
No,
then at least that, like Roddy's saying, you're kind of bring up the guys that you draft and develop. Now we got Heinola, we got Nyku down there. I mean, you could probably put together a pretty good defensive core just from, and then you mentioned Nogé too, of some okay defensemen that should probably be up over those other guys.
Well, the truth is, like, why are we picking up a refrigerator that's been around the league that hasn't really kept the beer cold? We've got a big refrigerator on the minor league team that we don't know what type of temperature he can keep the beer at. You know what I mean? Like, if we're going to put a big body in there, let's put the big body that's in the system that we drafted in the first round instead of picking up a borderline NHLer that is just taking up space. Now you have to worry about coming, keeping on the team.
Right? And you and AJ referred to it probably the best, is that they're in the system. And the system between the Moose and the Jets isn't that different. So they already know most of the plays, most of the breakouts, most of what they're doing. Why are we putting in new bodies when we already have bodies to play with?
You know, this might have come up before we came on the air, but what if it's a coaching problem?
I mean we're rolling the dice there, right? Yeah. And certainly that could be the issue, is that, you know, you, and again, like you said, Rod, like, guys are good in the room. We want guys that are good in the room that have been around, that have a little bit of experience. But my answer is, but we already have a guy who has 100 games of pro experience. How much more experience do you need to be actually in the lineup?
Yeah, this team has been at a point for the last 2 years where we've had all of these pieces that should be getting a look. You know, I still don't know why Sammy Niku comes in. He gets a single game or like two games here and there, and you're sending him back to the Moose. Like, yeah, Heinola, send him down to the Moose. Let him get acclimated to being in the city, playing professionally in a North American market. But you've got guys that have been here for so long. Like, Appleton spent the entire year last year, after making his NHL debut 2 years ago, sitting in the minors behind three different guys. The spot has opened up, so let him try and take that spot. Like, give him a chance to come out here and...
Well, and back to Rod's point, I mean, draft and develop is a great mantra to start talking about. When all the guys you're developing are going to other teams, guys like Zach Redmond, guys like Nick Batan, guys who have been in the system and have played in the system and know the system, and then all of a sudden, I'm going to go find a place where I can play because you won't play me, that's a big red mark to me on the way that you quote-unquote draft and develop.
Yeah, well, why have an asset, right, when you're bringing in and icing like guys that are proven to be on the borderline of being just adequate to fill a hole in the NHL. Yeah. And picking him up arguably from teams that are lower in the standings and teams that aren't as good as us. So we've got these chips. We don't know what they're gonna play like in any real stretch. Any like you bring up Nick Patan. Like the numbers when he played on that line with Wheeler, like those small sample sizes that we haven't really seen come to fruition. You put a guy like Patan on the fourth line, you know, with a couple of plugs who are borderline NHLers. What are you going to get out of him?
And
what
absolutely nothing.
Well, and AJ and I were talking about this before the show started. Yeah. Like, you're drafting guys based upon their offensive output, especially in the early rounds. Like, that's what your focus is on. So you're getting these guys in the first, second, third round who you've looked at their offensive numbers and you've gone, this guy's going to be an asset to our team. And then you ask them to step in and play a fourth line role, which they're not going to play any offense in that fourth line role. Why are you drafting guys? And again, I know we don't have to get into the whole draft thing, AJ. I know we had a big conversation about it, but why are you spending so much time working on or finding guys that can push offense if you're just going to throw them into a defensive role? Yes, they have to learn the defensive side of the game, but then give them a top six role down on the Moose and let them go crazy down there. Like, I don't understand that rush to get them into the lineup only to set them back even further than where they were.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, just talking about the Moose a little bit, I know sort of the thing that people always say is, oh, they're just down the hallway. Does anyone else get the sense that we do not use them like they're just down the hallway? Like, I don't follow other teams very closely and what they do with their guys that are down the minors or in the press box and moving back and forth, but it sure seems like it's pretty much negligible that they're in the same building and quote unquote down the hallway. It doesn't really seem to make a difference.
The team that you would best look at is Toronto, because they have they've done a great job moving guys up and down between the, especially this year, moving guys up and down between the Marlies and the Maple Leafs, using the window that they have to of waiver exemption, getting guys up and down, testing pieces here and there. And you can, you know, say whatever you want about the way Mike Babcock coaches. Those guys are getting the chances. Like, Nick Batan was brought up and he was put on the first line. and was actually given a legitimate shot when everyone thought he was out of his, he was on his way out of another NHL city.
Well, I mean, I'll even take it one step further and say, I mean, forget down the hall. Look at what Vegas does with Chicago. And I get it. Chicago Wolves are run differently than what the Moose are, and it's a completely different setup. But every guy they bring up can play in the NHL. It's not like they're bringing up guys and you're going, eh, he might be here for a couple games and go back down. No, these guys, Cody Glass is coming up because he dominated the AHL last year, and he is staying with the Vegas Golden Knights. I have not seen, and again, we get a couple of guys. We get, you know, a Morrissey who spent a year down there and he played really well. Lowry went down there for, you know, half a dozen games. He played really well, came back up. But we don't have any true graduates from the Moose program where they've come in and got and had to work their way through the Moose to get up to the Jets. Where you go,
Connor and Roslovic, I think, would probably be the closest example.
Exactly, where they've had to go down and endure a season of okay, I got to work my butt off to show off. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we have maybe two guys then, but those guys aren't even given. I mean, Connor's given the top six role, but Roslovic has yet to sort of get that top six.
He
wasn't
really given that top six role. You know, Matthew Perreault had to go down for
right, and that's true. Yeah,
so.
So it's a weird draft and develop system that we're talking about because we draft well and then we just kind of forget about the other half of it.
I just think it's been counterintuitive. Like we lived under this mantra for years where we were at the bottom of the league and, you know, we're drafting and developing and, you know, that's what we heard when we were on the cusp to compete and we never acquired anybody at the deadline. We were told we're a draft and develop team. Look at Nashville. Look at this model. Look at that model. But in truth, especially the last 3 years, we've been the opposite. Right. And guys that are ready to come up are looking for those, you know, opportunities that aren't
right.
that aren't because the coaching and the organization sees that there's an opportunity for them to move up. The opportunity of an open lineup spot because of something that's happened
because of an injury
on the ice. Yeah.
And guys are complaining. Vasilainen complained last year. Roslovic was like, oh, where's my chance? I'm ready. I want more. And they're sort of like being pushed off to the side.
Roslovic even complained about it just a week ago. You know, I'm a veteran. Treat me like a veteran. Like that's the exact right attitude that he should have at this point.
And as a small market team, we should be pushing our youth even more when they're ready, because that's the model, right?
Yeah.
Get them all their young, shore them up for the long term, and use those assets within the first 3 years of their entry level contract to get maximum production, so that your payroll is managed. Now we're not managing our payroll that way.
Not at all.
It is totally opposite of what this team should be. I think, anyways, It's almost like one hand trying to wash the other hand, but they're not connecting. And then that's kind of the mentality. We have the scouting. We have the people in place to draft these people, but we're not executing on the develop part.
Yeah. And that's
we're losing our assets.
Right, exactly. And that's shocking to me that we put so much time and effort into scouting and into drafting these players, and then we just kind of go, well, you're on your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's another example that people use, like you mentioned the Marlies, but people always cite the old Red Wings. Well, that was at a time where they would, like, leave their guys down in the minors for, like, twice as long as the next team, right, on average. And but now they're saying the league is faster, it's younger, it's more skilled. So it seems like you don't leave guys in the minors for 5 years. You leave them there for 2 years, and it's either you're using them or move them out for new assets or something like that. You can't just sit on these guys, like Roddy's saying, for such a long time until they're just frustrated. We were talking off-air before we started about LePon, who he went back in the draft. The Jets drafted him. They spoke very highly of him at the fan forum. Now there's spots on a fourth line, right, and Luoto gets up there. I mean, we mentioned Bork and Letestu. I was going to mention Letestu when I found out about his thing. I did Google Mustard and then his and there are a couple hits that come up on Google. If you Google Mustard and Myosopotopic or whatever the heck it is, I don't know what it all means. But
myocardial, whatever it is,
But I mean, how is LePon not in? Well, first of all, I know because Letestu and Bork ended up on what was the third line to start, which is not where LePon would be. But as a true fourth liner, it's like, why not? Well, like, what are we doing here?
He's got 400 career AHL games.
Well, and I said, like, he's kind of been, and I hate to say it again in terms of categorizing this, but he's been Cormier'd. Like, Patrice Cormier was an outstanding player in the queue when he got drafted, worked his way through, you know, through the Atlanta system, came to Winnipeg in terms of, and then he was sort of just, well, you're going to be the guy on the Moose now.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, he has all these other skills. Like, Why aren't we using these guys what we drafted, how we drafted them?
Because the 200 hockey men have spoken.
I like it. I like that. So speaking about injuries, a couple more that came out recently. Mason Appleton obviously out for a while still with a broken bone in his foot. No Letestu, obviously no Little. Gabriel Bork now down for 4 weeks, a lower body injury as well. So there's lots of room on that bottom six right now. We were just talking about bringing guys up. There's still guys out there as well. If Maurice is dead set on bringing in veterans, a guy like Jason Pominville is out there. Obviously, Jesse Puljujärvi could be had for cheap.
Can he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
I think the Edmonton Oilers are going to try and hold people hostage, but I think if you really want to move him, you'll move him.
I was reading he's firing up out.
He is. But Veselainen did that as well, and he scored his first AHL goal last week. So let's not put too much stock in that.
It's more of like you can't get him for cheap because, the optics are he's...
Right, he's third overall pick. I get that. But, again, the optics are Patrick Steffen was a first overall pick, and he's terrible. So let's not.
It wasn't back then.
Alexander Daigle was the first overall pick. Guy scored what 500 points over 1,200 games. Like
Radek
I get it.
Bonk.
Right. I get. Like there are optics all over the place. Let's be honest with each other. I don't think Ken Holland has a problem moving the guy. That's the thing. So, but again,
Sergei Bouton was the best first round draft pick.
Bouton. There you go. Big number three. So asking that question, there's going to be a lot of open spots on that. Obviously, Luoto's come up. We have Shaw up here right now. Are there guys that should be promoted as of right now?
Lapon.
JC Lapon is one. Okay. Anybody else from the Moose? I mean, I don't know if anybody's watched any Moose games. They haven't played well, but forwards only. I know Niku and Hainala would be obvious promotions, but forwards only. Are there any other guys down there that you would like to see maybe given a shot?
If it's going to be for a fourth line kind of role, because you bump up a couple guys and whatnot with the ones that are out. Like you said, most of the guys that are out are all bottom six, so it should be a close to negligible. But, if you find some room in the top nine for a Veselainen, I would like to see him because I really liked Veselainen's game. I watched him in a lot of practices and not as many games. And in person, just seeing him dice up all the other guys in the prospect, they were nothing. It was amazing. And, he didn't look so good in exhibition and training camp and whatnot, but, that's not who he is. Is
right.
Eight game sample size for 6 minutes a night either. So I would like to see him if they could find some room in the top nine, but it all depends how coach.
There's a lot of guys I'd like to see up Spacek
Harkins.
Well, after Harkins, AHL Player of the Week, why not give him a shot, right?
Yeah. I noticed this week that his numbers are off to a good start in the A. So I was like, maybe it's time to give him some more ice in the NHL on the fourth line and see. Didn't they play Seuss a bit lately?
Yeah, Seuss came up. He got all of 6 minutes of ice time, but, that's Maurice, so.
Still, there's...
But
one
he's
more.
Not the guy. They shouldn't have called him up over those other guys that you mentioned. He's not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Even for that role. Well, maybe he is. If you're only going to play a guy 6 minutes, maybe it's better to give it a guy like him because if anybody, follows the prospects, he's not one of the top, five forwards on the team
absolutely,
right now.
Yeah.
So he's not really the future of the Jets. So if you're just looking for a guy and it's like, okay, we're just going to bump up our top three lines, play the more minutes, we just need somebody to fill in, maybe you don't want to, I don't know how to say it, but embarrass a better player like a Spacek or something. I think of it like in the NBA finals when the last minute of the game you're up by 20 points or something and they throw the bench on so they could say they touched the court. I always think that stuff's nonsense. It's embarrassing. And so that's what I see, that if you're going to play a guy, Maurice can do that, then maybe Cease is the guy to do it, maybe not one of the other ones, but it all depends what the coach's plan is for these guys. And sometimes it feels like the plan is driven by the injuries, not so much about the personalities or the personnel that we have, right? It's all sort of not productive or proactive, but reactive. It's all reacting to things, right?
See, you mentioned, again, the coach's reaction to this, and I certainly understand he's running the bench, but I always wonder how much input a guy like Kevin Cheveldayoff has when they're talking about bringing guys up, because you have to know that he's taken some direction from upstairs as well. I'm sure Mark Chipman has got his ear at some point saying, we have this X amount of dollars invested in this guy. Why isn't he playing with the Jets yet? I'm always curious as to how much he has input on what personnel decisions are made by Paul Maurice.
So we've talked about the drafting
and
the personnel, right? So to me, when I take a step back and look at it, that to me, signifies that Paul Maurice has a stranglehold on what's happening as far as personnel moves, right? If you're drafting the right people, you have a wealth of talent in the A, and Paul Maurice is you see the type of guys that are being brought in. Is that consistent with the type of people that we're drafting? No, it's not.
Right, yeah.
Right? So you're looking at the big, heavy guys that have experience and all that, guys that you could plug in and in the NHL that have NHL experience. That's not the type of players that we're drafting, right? So it's Paul Maurice. And I'm of the mindset that the relationship is between Chipman and Maurice and Kevin Cheveldayoff is kind of in the middle. To me, that's the way that if it's not that way, then it doesn't make sense because your GM is the GM and it should have that ultimate input into what happens on the ice, right?
Yeah.
But if the coach wants to have his way and has a relationship with the guy that ultimately is actually paying the bills, then that to me is logically what I think is happening right now.
Yeah, bit of a problem.
So here's the question. They've talked about a rift in the locker room. Is there a rift in the office that maybe nobody's talking about?
Well, it seems like it's another one of those situations where there's a disconnect between the head coach and the general manager, that whatever the plan is and whatever the tone or the style of play that they want from this team, you know, as you alluded to, the players that are being brought in are not what we have been looking for. And it's not the way that the league is going. Like, you don't need these big, heavy defensemen on your second and third pair that are gonna, you know, gum up the front of the net, but can't make a breakout pass. Like, you were bringing in guys that are skilled players, that are fast players, a little bit smaller. Some of them do have a bit of grit to their game because that's the way that the Moose have been teaching them. But it feels like there's that disconnect that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff has a plan and Paul Maurice is not executing that plan, or there's just like a bit of back and forth between the two of them that we're not really privy to.
And let's be honest, right? The style of play and the style of player that they're bringing in, it plays to this market. Like, this room excluded, right? The fan base, that's what they look for, the underdog. They look for those grinder types. And,
well, I mean, yeah, that's Winnipeg in a nutshell.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
So if the coach has that mantra and the owners, knowing the market, right? So, you know, how does this all make sense? Because if you're looking at this analytically, it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Right?
So there's got to be something to that sauce. If you know what I'm saying.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think that there's always been that sort of inferiority complex ever since you know, the mid '80s when the Oilers were stomping everybody through the Smythe Division, and you go, well, what can we do, right? Like, this has sort of been the Winnipeg way.
How many Mike Eagles jerseys do you see out there? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a good question.
But
I look at it and I go, like, we have, I mean, on paper, McDavid, you know, aside, you know, you can probably match up McDavid and Dreisaitl and say, okay, we got a Scheifele Wheeler. We can run with the dogs in terms of that getting going. But on paper, we have far more talent than what the Oilers boast right now.
Absolutely.
And yet the Oilers seem to be, I mean, again, they're riding the backs of their two biggest dogs, but seem to be having an outstanding season when we're kind of stuck in the mud right now.
One thing I noticed on Edmonton is, like, oh, there's some interesting youth in there. Bear on defense.
Hey!
like, his name, I just found out, oh, Bear was a late-round draft pick. And so he's shoring up their defense. And it's like, I was thinking it'd be nice, like you guys were saying, it's like, oh, we got all these pieces in the A that aren't giving them a chance. It's similar to Pittsburgh when they had that horrible start and they changed their coach, and what happened? The new coach comes in from the A, brings all his A players, and that culture changed. They got the bottom six changed the team. I mean, the trade I forget who it was up front as well.
There's no denying that, but they got faster, they got younger, they got better. That's the thing.
And I was going to allude to that, especially with our depleted D-Cor. Like, we can ice 12 forwards that can put pressure on the puck. Forecheck heavy, a lot of speed, and you know what? Combine that with, hey, let's try these young guys that are offensively skilled, put them back there, and run with a team that can create that pressure and that excitement. Look at how Pittsburgh won those cups.
Well, and I mean, Pittsburgh was the underdog against Nashville.
With two legitimate defensemen, right?
Right, mm-hmm. And Pittsburgh was the underdog against Nashville when they opened that series. People were picking Nashville because, oh, look at Nashville. They got all this offensive talent. They're so great. They got Crosby. And it's like, yeah, but you guys haven't watched the previous 20 games they played where they outskated everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the difference.
It's not about the heavy game.
No, I think we've alluded to this fact, and I'm going to be the one to bring it up. We all know.
Jay, don't be the stick in the mud.
Okay, you know, we're 5 years in. Is it time to move on from Paul Maurice? Is he the issue?
Yes.
Yep. That's a tough question to answer right before the break, but let's venture into that then. I'm the fact that he's won as many games as he has here. Congratulations. The fact that he's lost as many games as he has over his career, I'm not really proud of, but. I look at it as if you're going to be 500 for the rest of your career, and I know he's not 500 right now, he's just below it, but if you're going to be 500 for the rest of the year, when looking at all the other guys who have won Stanley Cups and they're around 580, 600, we're not going to win a Stanley Cup with them. Simple as that.
Yeah. No, and, you know, I'm always of the mindset that this team's, you know, succeeded and won in spite of Paul Maurice, right? There have been some serendipitous things that have happened over the years that have put him in a position
to
shine, right? Mm-hmm. Injuries. And right now, he's probably going to come out looking like roses because now there's opportunity because his hand's been forced with the holes in the lineup that have been created.
The one thing that Paul Maurice never had in his career was a competent goaltender, and he has one in Connor Hellebuyck, and the team's still not succeeding.
I would argue against that. I think that early Cam Ward was competent.
I was just thinking Cam Ward.
Was competent, but he didn't really have defense with him. Because, I mean, when Mike Commodore's playing, you know, 20 minutes a night for you, you probably don't have a very good defense either. But in saying that, he also didn't take the Carolina Hurricanes to the Stanley Cup. That was Laviolette. So we're talking about a guy who was removed on a year where they won, and the coaching change, when Laviolette came in, put his systems in, made the difference. And you go, they didn't change any defense, they didn't change any players, they didn't change the goaltender, they didn't change, it was one guy. And all of a sudden that whole, I mean, again, there were some fortunate bounces along the way, there were some teams that were eliminated that shouldn't have been eliminated, some upsets happened, but you still got to win games to win the Stanley Cup, and they did.
You look at the top four in most losses for a coach in the NHL, and it's Al Arbor, Scotty Bowman, and Barry Trotz. Now they all have, well, Barry Trotz has one Stanley Cup, but the other two have multiple Stanley Cups, right?
Well, the other two have coached, 70 years together?
To get those losses, right? So it's perspective. Like, you can only use the excuse that he was in Hartford and Carolina for so long, right? We've been here, we know the all-world talent that we have on this team, and we haven't gotten there. And one could argue what he did and his decision making in the playoffs when we played against Vegas hindered the ceiling and brought it down a lot lower of what we were capable of, right?
Absolutely, so, yeah.
Hendricks in the playoffs at all.
He should have been in the press box. Play a player short.
You know what? Like, give him a suit and put him as an assistant coach for that series. That's all I would have said on that.
So I'm going to just pipe in on the Paul Maurice thing. I think it's, I mean, coaching, and you have your players, everything, you kind of, the way that I look at it is, I don't know if that he's the biggest issue to hindering the team. Well, yeah, I guess, yeah, he is. But in saying that, though,
injuries might be.
I don't know. Like, if you took a group full of 30-year-old gritty veterans, right, and you made a team out of them, 20 guys or whatever, he might be the best coach in the world for those guys. My issue is he doesn't seem to be the best coach for these ones. And so to be fair to him, he does have systems. People like him. He's a good talker, blah, blah, blah. It's not like he's not an NHL coach and hasn't won, you know, 700 games
right.
and lost 700. I mean, there's a lot of wisdom there. There's a lot to take away from it. But with this group, he seems like he does not make adjustments unless there's injuries. And so maybe he's the best coach in the world for a different group. And going forward, because we're on the coach topic, people always say, if not Maurice, then who? And then people want to shout out, you know, Boudreau or the Quenneville or something, like whoever's available of like the notable names.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, I don't think, and I've said this before on the podcast, it's not about the name. It's interviewing somebody who says, I have a plan for this group. I've seen what you guys have done. I see what your talent is. And I can optimize this group with this. And I don't care if I know that person's last name or not, or if they won a single game in the NHL. I don't care if they coach high school. Now, the thing is, that will look really, really bad on the organization if they do that. So, unfortunately, it'll likely just be another name. Maybe a Lindy Ruff. I don't know what he's up to, or Paul McLean, or whoever, right? But that's the problem, is it's just going to be the same 200 hockey men recycled. So, it's not like if we get rid of Maurice, everything is solved, although you do get the bump usually, right? The bump of
sometimes it's a catalyst. Right? You need a catalyst, and that's the catalyst. And then, like you also said, you need the change in the system, and you want the optics to look good, so you look for the change in the system with somebody that you can sell exactly.
Yeah. But the message in the room, though, bringing back to your point, AJ, is that Craig Berube last year, they go on to win the Stanley Cup. Barry Trotz comes into Washington, changes the way they play. They go on to win the Stanley Cup. Mike Sullivan goes into Pittsburgh, changes the way they play. They win the Stanley Cup. It's not like the coaches don't have an impact on what's going on the ice. And that's the thing, is that right now we're 5 years into Maurice, and we've gone up, and then now we're on the backside of that hill, and we're kind of coming down now. So
we've gone up, but we have a wealth of talent that the Jets have drafted those first 5 years that are coming to fore and are making an impact on the team.
Yes.
We don't have.
I agree.
You know,
there should
that Atlanta Association is pretty much non-existent.
There should be a plateau at some point, and we just went up and straight down.
Yeah, and that's a frustrating thing. Is in professional sports, your window is only your window for that amount of time.
Right.
And have we surpassed that window here? You know, when we've lost our top pairing right-hand defenseman already, that I think we mismanaged that asset coming into last year too. Like, where do we go from here? Because our talent pool is depleting, and we've got to address these entry level contracts and these draft picks now that we've pretty much let them wilt away in the A or in the press box, right? And we're going to get pitanned a lot more, right? So
I got a question to come in from the break. Does Bufflin ever play for the Jets again if this all gets solved?
We're going to start with that. Actually, it was the next thing to go to after the break. So we'll take about a minute's worth of break here, folks. Got the legal ID and a couple of commercials. We'll come back and we'll discuss Buff and a couple other things on the other side of the break here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
UMFM 101.5 broadcasts at 1200 watts from the University of Manitoba, located on Treaty 1 territory, the original lands of the Anishinaabeg, Nahiwak, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and the homeland of the Métis Nation.
Hey, want to join the team? Hockey Helps the Homeless comes to Winnipeg on December 5th and 6th. Join the Babich brothers, Lori Boschman, Trevor Kidd, and many more stars as they hit the ice at Seven Oaks Arena to raise funds and support for Winnipeg's most vulnerable residents. Become a tournament sponsor, support players or teams, or volunteer your time. Go to hhth.com for complete details. Hockey Helps the Homeless is proudly presented by Canada Life and is a registered Canadian charity.
Where are you boys headed?
Canada. We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sir.
Poutine.
Canada, huh?
Almost made it.
You're listening to the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You smell something, rabbit?
Fear.
And we are back here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM. Proud to have with us Rod and AJ from the Jet Centric podcast. We have Skippy, who hosts Freehand Radio just after me. And we have the sports editor of the Manitoban, Jason Pajak, here on the Jets Superfan Roundtable. Happy to have everybody along. And obviously, the biggest news out of Jets camp early in the season, and certainly progressing through the season, is about the biggest guy who didn't show up to training camp in Dustin Bufflin. Dustin Bufflin is currently suspended without pay, is currently recovering from surgery that apparently the Jets didn't approve, and there's all sorts of issues now with the PA. Skippy, you alluded to it before we went to break. Will we ever see Bufflin again? I'm going to take a stab at that and say probably not.
That's the first thing I thought of when I read that on social media today is like, yeah, no. And it didn't really occur to me because everything was playing out fine. The optics were really nice. Oh, yeah, we're giving him his time. He's thinking about it. But then things changed. And now it's like, oh, things are tense. And it's like, and there were maybe some, you know, I've heard rumors that Buff wasn't necessarily happy in Winnipeg to begin with, but had some family roots here, and then, you know, it wasn't.
His half-brother's on this campus.
Yes, true.
So,
well, don't out him. Now everyone's going to go ask him.
Well, no, he played last year for the Bison, yeah. So.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
For my ignorance.
So it's okay, AJ.
I'm used to it, but you guys are.
Full ignorance all the time. That's sorry, awesome. Carry on.
So I think that, I don't know if this was planned or set up or is just the eccentricity of Buff in general, but I think he might feel it is time to move on, and the Jets might feel the same way, even though they don't want it, but... You know, it's like, well, we're going to arbitration over not money, but something else.
But the arbitration, though, is not going to be NHL or / Jets generated. It's being generated by the PA. And this is where the problem comes in, is because if he signed off, and this was established well by a number of media outlets, if he signed off, if the player signed off on his medical exit from last year, the basically all players have to sign off that they're medically, you know, at the end of the season, they're medically fit, they don't need surgery, they're all good to go. If he agreed that they didn't need that, the Jets can't just turn around in September and go, well, we made a mistake. Like, that's not how it works.
From what I have read and heard, it seems to me like Bufflin put too much faith in the team physicians and also his own body to recover over the summer, because he didn't sign the form disputing the claim, because there's, right, like 25A, you sign that to dispute what the team physician says about the injury, and then you go, correct, get your second opinion.
Yep.
So what I've heard is that, you know, Buff went through the correct channels, the team went through the correct channels, and then his idea was, I'm going to take the summer off, I'm not going to skate, and I'm just going to let my body rest and heal. And then when he didn't skate all summer, he comes, and the first couple skates before, the informal skates before training camp, he realized, oh, my ankle is still messed up. And that was kind of the time where he started to make the decision or was thinking about retiring, because the whole thing comes down to timeline. If he told the Jets that he was thinking of retiring at the end of last season, you wouldn't go out and trade a Jacob Trouba. You wouldn't go out, right, and make all the moves you did.
But the NHL, just before we go on, Jay, the NHL, yeah, is the one that's going to challenge the PA on this, because if he signed off on that physical, on that examination form, there's no going back after you put your name on that. Mm-hmm. And that means that you're ready to come into training camp the following season, which means that you don't get insurance clearance.
Yeah.
There is zero insurance for you if you claim an injury at that point.
And
that's where the Jets are hung up now, because they're going, yeah, but we want him back, but... And we want him healthy, but we're stuck by NHL rules. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the disconnect has happened now, because the PA is pushing Bufflin to challenge it. The NHL is pushing the Jets to fight back on it. And it's kind of like, but both sides kind of like each other. We don't really want to fight.
Yeah. And the whole thing, like, people are construing that there's this disconnect there, that they're going to go to arbitration, that it's that Bufflin and the Jets are at odds with one another. It, to me, seems like it was a mistake by both sides at the end of the year, you know, Bufflin putting way too much faith in just the natural healing process and not going, you know, the injuries that he had, he should have gone for a second opinion.
See, but my concern is when he comes in and says, I have a broken bone in my foot, that's a new injury now. And if that didn't happen over the summer because you decided to take the entire summer off, okay, fine. If the doctors missed it, that's a bigger concern to me, mm-hmm, now, because now what were you guys doing on that exam that you missed a broken bone?
It also comes down to what you're looking for.
But that's what it comes down to for the final thing, is your final physical should be, hey, is your foot sore? No? Okay, then you're good to go. Okay, that's not really an examination. Mm-hmm. We should be doing the full examination properly.
Could it be a huge mistake on both sides?
Like, right.
I mean,
yeah.
That, at the end of the year during the playoffs, you're sucking it up. You're playing.
Yes,
hurt,
exactly. Yeah.
Right? And you're trusting it on both sides. You know, you trust the player knows what their body's capable of and what they're feeling. And you trust that the team physicians are actually looking for the right, mm-hmm, thing. right? And it's just a case of really bad luck that this happened.
Right? And it comes down to, you know, the doctors can't look at something unless you tell them what's wrong.
Right.
If Bufflin thinks that it's an ankle, that it's his ankle that's making his foot hurt and not a broken bone in his foot, he's not going to tell them to look at his foot. He's not going to tell them that it's this other thing. He's going to tell them that it's his ankle that's still bothering him, and they're going to say, oh, looks like there's nothing wrong with it. We're going to have to medically clear you because you're able to play and you're able to skate on it. So it comes down to the doctors didn't look for something, and also Bufflin
may not have told them to
look at something at all.
And at the end of the day, Bufflin's really simple dude. He just needs a boat, a lake, a rod, and that's all.
Like all of us.
He's made all the money in the world that he'll ever need, and if he's not having fun and he doesn't feel well, I mean, he doesn't need hockey.
No, and I think that's what it comes down to, and I'm not saying that. So when you asked Skippy about will he ever play again, I think my answer is no, and I think it's injury related. I don't think that I know, sir, he had surgery, and I know they said surgery went well, but I don't know if Buff is going to be, I don't know if Buff wants to go through another injury like that again. That's the question. Are you willing to put your body through that war of 82 games and say, all right, I'm ready for the playoffs where it gets even worse, when you're already going, I don't really want to do this anymore?
And he didn't have much fun at the end of the year last
right.
year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's
to
be fair. That is true, AJ.
On.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple games in the playoffs, we had fun. Definitely not the last game, and not mm-hmm. since December to April. That was no fun for no.
Especially the stick at the bench, you know, when he, you know, and not being on the first unit PP and everything else.
Yeah.
And showing that frustration. He wasn't having fun. And if you watch this team over, you know, since 2011, it's all about fun for Bufflin, right?
Yeah.
So.
And the rift in the room really affected him. Like a guy like that, who's a very important piece of that room, like if he's not happy there and whatever was going on dragged him down, like, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to out Paul Maurice here, but we had him for the Bison fundraising dinner last year. He was there talking about, you know, everything, and everybody was asking, you know, what's going on with Buff when he was injured last year. Before the playoffs, before everything got there, is he coming back? How close is he? And the one thing that Maurice said is, you know what? I don't care what anybody says. We just need him back on the ice because I can't have him in the room anymore. He's just causing way too much trouble back there. And you get the idea that the guy is a total prankster, total, you know, going to have fun, going to joke around. How much does that clash with a guy like Blake Wheeler, who had the win or die attitude last year? Like, where, at what point does Buff go, all right, maybe I just got to take a locker further down the room now.
Yeah. And exactly, Wheeler coming in and saying, I'm going to take my foot off the gas with this, like with my leadership style, and I'm going to bring a little bit calmer and more fun attitude into the room. So maybe that, to me, screams that that's exactly where the loggerheads were.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you say that, because I just think of the Sarah Oleski interview with Wheeler, where if you read it in between the lines, you don't even have to read between the lines, it sounds like he torpedoed the room. I mean, it's interesting to me that a guy who admits that he kind of ruined everything last year, that's what it sounds like. I mean, you could listen to it, but that's kind of what I read from it. And then, and so he's a hero now because he's admitted it, he's grown from it, he's our captain, blah, blah, blah. Whereas we're talking about the young players and what the city likes and everything, and Liney, it's like people are like, this entitled brat, whatever, you know, get him out, just trade him already. He expects $19 million, which he's never asked for, never said that.
No.
I mean, there's very few reports about what he was asking. People like, he thinks he's going to get Austin Matthews money. I'm like, where? Where did you see that reported? Nowhere. And so people are at, like, Liney's throat, whereas the veteran guys get a pass. And I think that there was something to what you're saying. I'm sort of back to the Wheeler thing. It sounded like that was a hard thing. And with Buff's personality, it's almost like you want your leader, like if Wheeler was like at a 10, right? But he's at a 13. And Buff, you want the guy to be chill, so you want him at like a 2, but he's at like a -3. And it's almost like too chill, like you're saying, kind of in the room.
The old yin and yang
some
in terms
issues
of,
there.
Yeah.
I'm going to pipe in, though, too, as well about, I do think Buff plays again. And I like what you said, Jay, about the fact that I think it's all procedural. Like there's a CBA, there's an NHLPA. He does have a contract. The team, you know, reports to the NHL. There's so many bodies here that I think it's easy to interpret what's happening here as Buff hates the Jets hate Buff.
Right.
They never want him back. He never wants to play. He hates, you know, Wheeler, whatever it is, right? Like, you can interpret all those ways, but it feels like a lot of the stuff concerning him is procedural. And when you mentioned also, Jay, about the timeline, it sounds like he got talked off before even training camp started. There was a sense that Buff was going to be gone. Like in the, I think it was Dreger's report, where they basically talked him out of retirement. I don't think they talked him out of retirement at training camp when he hurt his ankle. Yeah. I think they talked him out of retirement in his exit meeting. So he may have had an injury, said, this wasn't fun. I got an injury. I'm retiring. Chevy says, say anything.
Take the summary. Yeah.
Don't say retire. Relax. Just don't use the R word, right? And so then he chills, but now all the procedures weren't followed to follow up with an existing injury that he already had. Injury gets worse or not any better, like the way that maybe he thought he would. And now here we are, right?
See,
and so it's hard to like pin blame exactly where it was, because Buff's as chill as possible. Him and Chevy Day Off are very close, so I don't think it's a
Well, and I think that's why Chevy keeps telling everybody. Like Chevy keeps telling everybody, it's a complicated situation. Like he's not saying, oh, we're at loggerheads. We can't find an agreement. We're going to take this to an arbitration. He's just saying, hey, listen, it's a complicated situation. I think Chevy and Buff obviously know more about what's going on than obviously we do. But at the same time, neither side has come out and said and literally pointed a finger at the other and said, this is your fault. Yeah. And that's where I think, again, the pressure is coming from the PA to challenge this. The pressure is coming from the NHL to contest this. And the Jets and Buff are kind of in the middle, going, but we don't want to do that. We just want to be happy.
Yeah. The best thing to do is, you know, take it through the proper legal proceedings and just settle. You know, do what you need to do and say, okay, we've come to an agreement. We're going to do this. That's the best you can do.
$4 million instead of 8. Boom, done.
And if that's the case, then yeah, I'm okay with that. As long as we get maybe one more year out of Buff, if he wants to come back, that would be great.
Your thing saying that you think he retired or he's done, doesn't play for the Jets because of injury. I mean, he's had the surgery. Now he's got all this time to recover. He's probably not going to come back in May or April, whenever he's kind of expected to. So he's not out for this year. Now we're talking about Buff at 34 years old, just coming off of surgery, and he's owed $6 million for this next year. I think that might be the deciding thing where it's like, is it really worth it to come back?
Right.
Not because he's not capable of getting in shape after having a surgery and fixing all this stuff and having a year, and the relationships aren't problematic. So I think it's going to be a combination of those things, just time, right? He's 34, $6 million, that's nothing to him. I'm going to go fish instead.
At the end of the day, though, does Dustin Buff need to come back?
No.
No. He's got a Stanley Cup.
It muddies things now for the cap and for like all those kind of things, which is probably because the Jets are pretty dumpy this year, which kind of touched over. This is probably the best year to
live without Buff. But see, that's the thing though, is everybody keeps saying it muddies the waters for the Jets this season. I don't see it that way, because as of right now, he's not getting paid, which means you have $7 million available.
Right.
If he does get paid X amount of dollars, okay, fine, no big deal. But you're still going to put that money onto LTIR because you can. So why are we even worrying about $7 million when you don't have to?
Well, I guess just because he's still under contract for next
year. Sure.
So whatever you do this year, if you get a rental or something that, he's got 2 years.
Yeah, that's a summer problem, though. I'm not worried about that right now. I want to win this year, not next year.
Fair.
I think with the LTIR thing, the way that it works is you have to have it. Obviously, it has to be a hockey-related injury, and you have to be able to prove that it's a hockey-related injury, but it has to be at the start of the year, or it has to be at a certain... There's something in the CBA.
But you can't penalize the Jets for basically saying he didn't show up to... Yeah. Like, again, I know he shouldn't show up to camp.
I think what they would have to do is that, like, Buff comes back, that cap hit goes back onto the cap, and then they say he's done. So they need to keep that money open.
Or they just retroactive it to September 1st and say, oh, injury retroactive September 1st LTIR.
But do they have the paper trail to say that he was assessed in September?
But that's the question, though. So I don't know what all the legal ins and outs of that are. I don't know what the CBA ins and outs of that are. But at the same time, though, I think you have $7 million to play with that you're just not touching because you don't know you didn't know Buff was going to be out. And now that you know that he's out, well, go improve your team.
And now with the little thing, too, if his money goes off there, that's $5 million of cap, 5.5 or whatever it is. Right? So they got a bunch of cap space freed up, I suppose. But maybe whatever they do, make sure it's solvable after the summer.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if you're going to go and acquire, a UFA, sure, go do that if you want. I don't know what the next step would be for the Jets, but...
I'd probably claim a waiver wire.
Another one.
A waiver wire defenseman.
Probably, yeah.
From
the 30th ranked team in the NHL.
This guy's got experience.
He played 12 games last year. He's got experience.
Yeah. So we know the Jets can score. We know they have some problems on defense. How, in your minds, how's the goaltending so far? Because I think that as it stands right now, solid goaltending, we're not having a problem. But what's the load management for Connor Hellebuyck if there's a chance to make the playoffs?
Yeah, like Brossoit has come down to earth in a very big way, right? So
he's back to Oilers Brossoit, which is not good.
No, that's not good at all.
Well, like Connor Hellebuyck is here.
Yeah.
He is according to MoneyPuck.com, he's the fifth best goaltender in the league save percentage above expectation.
Right.
He's saving at like a 970 rate, wow. Like above he's like right. 0.68 there, above expectations or something like
there's
that.
There's no
something
doubt
crazy.
He has won games for us this season so yeah. far. Yeah, no doubt about that. But again, what's the number for that you would be looking at in terms of keeping him? If there's a chance at playoffs, I'm not saying that they're going to not make the playoffs, but if they got a shot at the playoffs, what's the number you give Hellebuck in the regular season? Because I don't know if he got tired. I mean, again, we can speculate, but I mean, that Vegas series, he didn't play the way he did in the first two series. Maybe there was some fatigue in there from playing so often, so many nights, so often in the playoffs. But you want to make sure the guy has still got a little bit left over, a little bit of gas in the tank for if there is a playoff.
Was he horrible, though? In the early
he wasn't. He was,
and you compare him to Marc-Andre Fleury that series, too. Where
right, was, and Marc-Andre Fleury was out of his mind, yeah. And that's the thing. It wasn't like he was super terrible. There were a couple that you go kind of go, he probably wants that one back, though. So
mostly puck handling.
Yeah, well, issues, right? That's a skill, and that's something
just
we should
stop
improve.
Doing it. Just leave it.
Just leave the puck alone.
Just, why are you leaving your net for any reason?
Hold on. And does anyone else notice? I'll just throw a little thing. I'll get back to the question.
Yeah.
When he stops the puck for a defender, does it feel like he's the slowest person in the world to get out of the way? It's like, guys coming to whip.
Yes. You're not alone. Yeah. Not alone.
But the thing that kills me, though, is he stops, and then he just takes a look. Like, just stop it and go back to your net. Yeah. You don't even need to look to see who's coming. Yeah. Just stop it and go back to your net. He stops. He looks around. He takes a quick gander. Oh, there's a guy over there. Okay, here you go. And I'm just like, you wasted like 10 seconds. Just go back to your net.
No. I'll say this about the goalies. I Hellebuck has looked amazing.
Yeah.
Brossoit just physically looks amazing. I have a man crush on Brossoit. He's the best line player on the team by far. The Jets are a very ugly team. I'm going to say this on the record. Brossoit is the only saving grace. Everyone else is average.
Especially since Sherratt left. The ugly meter will be Sherratt.
And since Perreault cut his hair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why would he do that?
He was a beauty with the hair.
He's married. He doesn't need it.
Yeah. But I don't have really strong opinions about goalies because, as we all kind of know, goalies are a little bit voodoo. I mean, Hellebuck can play out his mind now. And then just crap the bed, come playoff time or, end of the season, just kind of come off. So it feels like if you can get healthy, both your goalies kind of both playing a good number of games going into the playoffs, and then ride your main guy, right, as much as you can, mm-hmm. and hopefully sweep a team or win five and give him some rest, too, and get his rest that way. So I don't have strong opinions. I'm not sure what the science is on that, too. Like, I don't know what the analytics are, if people really looked at that. I know usually with goalies, people will talk about back-to-back games and how good or bad that is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of evidence there to say, definitely don't do it.
Well, if you ask a goalie, they're always like, play me more.
Yeah,
like, if I'm on a streak, play me more.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, well, there's got to be some sort of happy medium here. But
yeah. The numbers kind of, it's goaltenders who play 60 games or more. I don't think a goaltender hasn't played 60 games or more and won the Stanley Cup in like 20 to 30 years. I think the last person to do it was Martin Brodeur, his first Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
But like, that's kind of with the type of load management, that's what you're looking at, is that you want them to play 60 games or less.
Right. So every three games on and one game off.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That shouldn't be that hard to achieve that, right?
And then split back-to-backs.
You would think, yeah.
And manage your back-to-backs, too. Shouldn't be that hard. So, but, I mean, we went to the Finland trip. I always bring this one up. I mean, they travel all the way across the world, and then they play in Hellebuck in back-to-back games.
Right.
In Finland.
Yeah.
And then they got another week off. It's like, why are we bringing Comrie here? Why are we Brossoit? Like, what are we doing here? So as long as we learn from the back-to-backs, it seems like the best thing to manage. And then, like you say, probably don't go more than three or four games playing the same guy.
Yeah.
Right? And if we can kind of do it throughout the season, everyone stays healthy, fingers crossed. Knock on something. Then I think we're good. I don't know.
So we're a fifth of the way through. We got about 2 minutes left in the show. Fifth of the way through the season.
I thought you meant a fifth of the way through the show.
No.
How long is this?
Yeah, we're going all night.
All night.
Right.
Fifth of the way through the season. We're hovering around 500 right now, 8-7-1. What's the consensus feeling on where this team finishes?
I've been saying it all year. The way the team looks now, it's one of those voodoo seasons where they're either going to miss the playoffs or win the Stanley Cup. There's no in between. They're not making the playoffs and going out in the second round. They're either going to miss the playoffs by a country mile, or they're going to win the Stanley Cup.
So, Jay, you're in the all or nothing camp.
Realistically, they're a cusp team, like the second wild card.
Yeah.
I think that's where they slot in, and that's where they are right now, and that's where they're going to stay. Can they make some waves in the playoffs? The way the NHL is, yeah.
Anything can happen. Exactly. You just got to make the dance, right?
I think they're a ninth place team. They don't make it. But that's assuming that everything stays exactly the way it is. And we know that that's not going to happen. No. Something's going to change, if not with the Jets, with the teams around them, too.
Colorado's injuries alone are causing a big wave, So
the big question is, do they turn into the Iginla Flames for the next few years?
That's a tough question. Yeah. That might be the next episode. That's a question.
I had them as a wild card when I was thinking that Buff was coming back. So they're definitely, in my mind, they're a 9-10 kind of thing. I mean, obviously the difference between a 7 to 11 can be 2 or 3 points. So, yeah, it could kind of swing. Maybe they can get into the playoffs, but I think it's negligible.
I think when I say 9, I mean they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I was kind of saying that range though between 7 and 11. Sometimes there's only a couple points. But, I mean, where they stack up is probably a 9-10. And the teams around them, like you mentioned, Colorado, but St. Louis is going to be better than them. Nashville is. Colorado, I think, still will. And I'm a big Dallas supporter. I think Dallas passed them, too. So that's just in the Central, never mind any Pacific teams, right? So.
Well, if Pacific teams can ever figure out how to play hockey.
Well, three of them are going to get in for
three
sure.
of them are getting in, but so we'll see what happens with where the Jets end up. I don't disagree. I think they're going to be a bubble team as well in terms of being on that the wild card cusp, and I think it'll be one of those things where they're there till the end of the season. It'll just come down to do you have enough points at the end when the race is over? So
my show's next, so I can ask this next question and talk a little bit into it.
You certainly can.
It's just I read that article on TSN about the heart player who has the most heart in every Canadian team, and the Jets were blank because they're still defining who they are, and so they didn't list a player that was the heart of the Jets. And I think both Kachucks were the hearts of their teams in Calgary, and heart was many different factors. So it was just like, who do you think? And I read that article and I thought so far this season it's been Morrissey.
Yep.
For me.
He's keeping that team together.
Who do you think is the heart at this point of the season?
Nick Batan.
He's coming back.
You know what? Let's go with Hellebuck. I mean, that guy's like everybody when Pavlik was, keeping us in the game, making timely saves back then. It was like, oh, how important that is. And we hear so much. I mean, this guy's stealing games for us, and he's getting very little praise for it. And, and the stats that you mentioned, Jay, I mean, like, he's out of his mind. And not that he talks a lot or he's a real leader or anything like that. But, I mean, if he's stealing games and you're, what did you say, 8-7-1?
8-7-1 right now,
I mean, they don't deserve to be 8-7-1 without him.
Correct.
So that's pretty hearty of Hellebuck. So.
Anybody else jumping in? Hard. I'll drop a name. I think that you don't get to be 8-7-1 either without Nikolaj Ehlers right now. So, I'd say for everybody who wanted him traded before the season starts, and now he's leading the league leading the team in every important statistical category. Don't trade him. Maybe realize that he's actually a better player than you thought he was.
He's not Burmistrov 2.0.
Thankfully, he is not Burmistrov 2.0.
Bad memories.
Don't bring up that name again. But that is, we're out of time. We're now creeping into Skippy's show here, so into Free Range Radio. But I want to thank AJ and Rod. Where can they find you if they're looking for you, AJ?
Jet-Centric Podcast. We're just on the Twitter. I think Daniel's running the Facebook and never does anything on there. we record periodically.
Yeah.
We haven't done guests for a while. Roddy's got a couple that have still been sitting in his pocket for the last year, which I won't say right now, but he's got a couple. So do I, man. It's like life's busy. But, yeah, we have guests. And then if you anywhere you listen to podcasts, I mean, you'll find us on Apple and
Spotify. You guys are on
everything,
all that stuff,
It's on everything. So
right on.
Hold on. I want to read one quote, though, here.
Okay. Make it quick.
Skippy took a bit of time. We talked about Niku and the defense. This is from November 11th, 2018, so not quite a year ago. This is Scott Billick tweeted out, Paul Maurice on why Joe Morrow will play over Sammy Niku on Sunday. I have Morrow ahead of him. It's about winning. So that's 1 year ago. So I don't think with the Sammy Niku thing, people that are high on Sammy
You're
Niku.
You mean to end on a high note.
You mean Joe Morrow who got the PTO and then cut from the Rangers? Is that Joe Morrow?
I don't think Niku is valued as high by the coach as he is by the people that are into analytics and a lot of the fans that see the value there. So we talked about Maurice, and it's stuff like that that is going to drive a lot of people crazy, that sort of attitude. And maybe it's just lip service. He's just saying that because it's for the veteran, but it's the wrong call to not play Niku. So
Rod, I mean, obviously you're on the podcast as well in terms of doing all that stuff. But again, if people are looking to jump on board and give you some help getting the funds raised for the recovery center, the Bruce Oak Recovery Center, where can people go for that?
Yeah, they can go to the Bruce Oak Recovery Center website. There's a donation page there. I'm always raising funds, and we just had our annual Baby Gaby Bowl in September. We raised over $4,300.
Which is huge, yeah.
Mostly, I'm just here for the conversation. So I'm Roddy Batts on Twitter, open to discussing everything when it comes to changing the way we look at addiction and addictions treatment. You know, it's a cause that's near to my heart, and I'll stand with the Oaks every step of the way from Maryland. And so thanks for all your support.
No problem, man. Like,
we are having a Movember event.
Okay.
So Movember event on the 29th.
Okay.
At the Saddlery, and it's going to be a karaoke night. So $10 a ticket, and we're going to have live karaoke there. And
right on.
It's going to be fun.
Okay. Clear your calendars, folks. 29th, you're now busy. There you go. Jay Manitoban, lots of work going on there. You just published a piece on how you can fix the Bison's penalty kill, which I read and had a good chuckle over. Yep. What else is coming up on the Manitoban?
I'm going to be talking to a few members of U Manitoba Esports because Rec Services has added intramural FIFA 20 to the list of intramural sports you can get into at the U of M. Coming up.
How do you have esports as an intramural sport? Like, doesn't that actually mean you have to do something to...
That is what I'm going to find out.
All right, then. That's awesome. And Skippy, I'll give you a chance. Preview your show as we get out of here right away.
I got some new music from... I'm trying to share a little bit from the new Kanye. I'll talk about that. Some old music from The Cure. Hey, it's an hour and a half of free range.
Absolutely. That is awesome. We're going to get out of here right away. Gentlemen, we can't thank you enough. Would you do it again? You want to come back for the next round table?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Awesome.
We would definitely love to have you back. I will clear spots for you guys anytime you want in terms of getting stuff on. I will definitely be promoting the 29th for you there, Rod. We'll talk about that in the next couple of weeks as well on the show, so we'll make sure that gets out as well so you get some additional push there. Obviously, the podcast as well. Check that out, folks. It's awesome. And read Jay in the Manitoban whenever you can. With that, the Hawk Show is done here for another night. Glad to have you along, everybody. Thank you, Skippy, for letting us run a little bit overtime. That's awesome as well. Stay tuned for his show, Free Range Radio, coming up right away here on 101.5 UMFM.